Ingild Ostrom is an artist whose uniquely lyrical, atmospheric vocal style has been described as Australia's answer to Björk and Marianne Faithfull, with a dash of Lisa Gerrard thrown in for good measure. Inga has recently released Elk, her second album, and she's here to talk with me about that. Welcome to Ultima Thule, Inga.
Thank you, George.
Your first album, Urchin, was released way back in 1998, so it's been a long time between recordings for you.
That's true.
So how would you say your music has evolved over the last half decade or so? What have you done differently with Elk?
Right, okay. Ooh, a lot of things, I guess. I've involved a lot of other players and arrangers, I guess, for Elk. Yeah, I have. It's taken, it's been maybe 4 years between albums. It generally takes me a long time to write anyway. So, yeah, it sort of took a good year for me to decide exactly what I wanted Elk to be. And I didn't, of course, even have the concept of it being Elk, like the icy Scandinavian music that it has become. So I guess the way in which it's developed, it's a lot more arranged, orchestrated. Yeah, it has definite riffs, I guess you could say. So more things for people to hold on to.
It certainly comes across as a more multi-layered and complex recording, I think, than Urchin was.
That's very true. Urchin was much more... I was at that stage probably a little bit more into just atmospherics. So more like a soundscape with beats and voice, whereas this one is sort of... I guess, yeah, more orchestrated.
So this is perhaps trying to say something a little more complex than just enjoying the sound for its own sake.
Yeah, exactly, and perhaps trying to create a clearer picture, like using string orchestration to actually create a landscape.
You mentioned the Scandinavian tone of the recording, so that, mm-hmm. that was the theme that you were working with running through this?
For part of the album, yes. There were sort of two main themes. So half of it was drawing from my Scandinavian roots, and I actually had a picture on my wall of a moose crossing a road and all this mist and trees and whatever, or leafless trees. So that was sort of like the pivotal image for half the album. And then the other half, I've always been into that sort of more jazz, I guess you could call it old school sort of jazz flavour, the more 40s film noir sort of thing. So it was a difficult sort of decision to make to fuse the two, because they don't, you know, it's hard to fuse both those elements because they're sort of either end of the spectrum, because the Scandinavian stuff is definitely more electronic and modern, sounding more crisp, whereas the other half of the album, I think anyway, is more pertaining to that, yeah, the 40s record scratch sort of sound, more romantic, I guess.
I understand that you've worked as a film composer, and a lot of the reviews I've read of Elk certainly talk about it in very visual terms.
Mm-hmm.
So I personally wouldn't see it as those two ideas conflicting.
Oh, good. Well, I don't think so. I mean, putting the album together, it was very much... I had to sort of think of the songs as a journey. So that's how I had to create the whole of Elk. So it's a... I don't know, somehow got a through line, I guess.
So how important has your experience as a film composer been in contributing to the way you've put Elk together?
Well, I guess I work visually anyway. Like, even when writing all of Elk, I'm constantly thinking. It's like different chords, different chordal movements evoke different images for me. So it all becomes my own little movie. Each song is like a separate film type thing. And I guess that's what I'm trying to do, is create the music so people will be transported to that place. And that's, of course, what film does. So with music, you don't have that, the added bonus of the visual, of course. But so that's what I try to do with music.
So people have got to use their own imaginations to create the picture.
That's right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, it allows them a little crack in there, you know, to create their own... their own visual, I guess.
I think you've got to make people work for their enjoyment from time to time. Don't make it too easy for them.
Exactly.
So speaking generally, is that the most important motivation for you as an artist, being able to give people that musical picture, as it were? Or are there other motivations that cause you to sit down and write music?
I guess it's mainly those, and then there's also emotional triggers. But I just feel like it all sort of ties in somehow, like once you start really tugging away at some sort of emotion, it instantly is going to start conjuring up images anyway, You know what I mean? And I just feel like that they work so well together when you do that. So you might be telling a story, and you, really, if you can create the music like that too, then it's so much stronger. But I guess that is the sort of main impetus, is to transport people. So it is a whole body transporting. So we've got the visual, we've got the sound, everything, I hope. Mm. Even if you can taste it, fantastic.
Well, there's certainly a good taste to the to the current recording.
Great.
Talking about the emotional component of the recording, one thing that I've noticed is that a lot of your songs seem to deal with obsessive states or situations of unfulfilled or perhaps misfulfilled desire, and this general feeling of perhaps emotional unease. Why do you use that as a central theme of your music, and why do you think people respond to it?
Well, that's very interesting, because I felt like Urchin, my first recording, was very much like that, and a little bit more angst-ridden, whereas this one, when I listen to it, and the lyrics, when I read them, I think, oh, okay, they're sort of more satisfied. They're still yearning, but it's not an angst thing, or where it's out of reach. So I think people are holding on to some of the visuals because perhaps they've experienced them, or perhaps I'd like to experience those things. I guess there's a lot of raw emotion in there. Yeah, I don't know if I'm really answering your question, but...
Is it perhaps because people relate more in our uncertain times to feelings of not feeling secure?
Well, I guess we've all been there, hey? I think that's more common, probably, than feeling really solid these days in anything, really, isn't it? Everything is very transient, I guess. So
what's the response to Elk been like?
So far, so good. We've had some really lovely reviews, a lot of lovely reviews. It's been quite shocking, in fact. Beautifully written, everything that we could want. There was a Melbourne review that came out last week, though, that wasn't so lovely. He sort of said the music was surly, which I thought...
Well, that's a typical Melbourne thing.
Is that right? Yeah, I was thinking, what is it with those Melbourne people? I think they're going through their sort of naive music stage, or have been there for a little while. I love Melbourne, and there's a lot of great music that comes out of Melbourne, but basically it has been really well received.
The artist with whom you've probably been compared to most frequently is Icelandic singer Björk. And now, leaving aside the fact that you're probably sick of hearing people say that, how much of the comparison is justified? How consciously did you set out to emulate Björk, or is it simply a case of sharing the same sort of Scandinavian consciousness?
I sort of feel there might be some aesthetics in common. But then if you listen to Björk's album and then you listen to mine, there's a lot of differences. I mean, yes, we are singers and we love electronics and orchestration, but there are a lot of people doing that stuff. I guess I'm quite playful lyrically, vocally, melodically. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I guess I'm a big fan of hers, but I didn't listen to any of her music while I was writing. Like, I kept... away from it, kept a bit of distance, because I know that can be, well, you can really sound like the person too distinctly. We just have, it's a common strand in there, and I think it's because I do love that Scandinavian, the mystery and the magic of the Scandinavian sort of, I don't know, maybe it's a folklore, I don't know exactly what it is, can't quite put my finger on it, but it's filled with another worldly quality, and perhaps that's what we both really into. I know that's what I really love. Oh. And experimenting too, and there's a lot of stuff coming out of Iceland that is very experimental, like Moom and Sigur Rós.
So are those the sorts of people that you listen to for pleasure?
Yes. I really like that sort of music. Otherwise, I might be listening to, let's see, I don't actually often listen to music at home. I really like a bit of silence. But I do listen to a lot of Beats and Voice sort of people, because I really love that combination. But I also listen to things like Amon Tobin. That's just more cut-up beats and strings and what have you. I really like modern music, but I like classical music as well. I'm not very well versed in classical music yet, but that's something that I'm aiming to develop, just because I think also it's going to help with the orchestration, because I think I'll continue along these lines with further albums. So
what do you have planned for the future?
I'd like to take the band overseas. Are we going to try and get ourselves to Europe, maybe Canada? Start writing a new album. And, yeah, I don't I don't know where it's going to go yet.
Hopefully not take another 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm trying to start early this time. Last time I had 2-year break, which is just criminal, really. You can't do that. You've got to keep the cogs oiled. Yeah, so basically those things, I guess, and just become a better composer and lyricist and read more, all of that, just draw from more sources.
And in the short term, you're performing this Friday at the Vanguard
That's
in Newtown.
Right,
Can
yes.
you tell us a little about that?
The set will be a little bit more stripped back than usual. Our drummer is overseas at the moment, so half the set will be more acoustic. And then we'll have drummer Lawrence Pike joining us. He's from Pivot, a group called Pivot. So it should be interesting. I don't know exactly how it's going to go. I've just come from a rehearsal with Veronique, my violinist, and so we'll do a duo, just violin and voice. Should be interesting. And then our Bertie Blackman's going to be supporting us.
So that's this coming Friday at the Vanguard at 42 King Street, Newtown. Inga Lilstrom, thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you, George. That's great.